passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. Got another great show for you today. We're pleased to be joined by Colson Barbas, Blue Jays area scout who signed Alek Manoah. Obviously, Alek is playing a very big role for the Blue Jays this year. We're happy to get Colson on to join us to discuss signing Alek as a first-round pick out of West Virginia. Before we get started, just a reminder, this Baseball America podcast is brought to you by Rapsodo. Rapsodo is offering all listeners $500 off their hitting 2.0 and pitching 2.0 units from now until August 1st. Head over to rapsodo.com/summersteal and use the code BASTEAL, that's BASTEAL, to save $500 off on all unit purchases. Once again, that's rapsodo.com/summersteal. Use the code BASTEAL to save $500 off on all unit purchases. And with that, we are very happy to be joined by Colson Barbas from his home in Richmond, Virginia. Colson, you drafted Alek Manoah in the first round 2019. What was it like for you seeing someone that you drafted that high get to the majors this quickly and have the immediate success he did?
It's been a thrill. And I mean, that is more so, you know, for Alek than anything else, just to see him, a guy that, you know, as an organization, we believe in so much. And, you know, personally, it's part of what drove our interest in him, in addition to the stuff, you know, but the person and seeing him get there has just been, it's been awesome to see him and his, and, you know, and also his kind of entourage and his mom and family and friends and just everybody kind of enjoying it. So, and, you know, so it's been great. I mean, as for how quick he got there, it's, that's a testament to Alek himself. So, that speaks a lot about, I think, who he is and his belief in himself.
Absolutely. So I want to dive a little more into the process behind drafting Manoah. But first, I want to ask you, how did you get into scouting? Take us through kind of your journey, how you got to be an area scout for the Blue Jays.
Sure. Oh, man, gosh. Out of school, yeah, I was a history major, man. So, I went to a Division III school, wasn't good enough to ever get paid any money to play baseball. So, but it was always a passion, you know. So it was how can I work in baseball? And so that started as minor league intern, working selling tickets, getting in a in New Britain, Connecticut, way back in 2003, I think it was, getting in a mascot uniform, dragging the field, you know. A lot of people have had those experiences, pulling the tarp, all that. So did that for a year, and then I went down to Columbus, Georgia, and helped. I ran the ticket office down there for a couple of years, in addition to doing all the same other things that that you do as a minor league employee. And so I did that for a couple of years, and then you know what it was? I ended up in Hawaii helping. Well, I didn't go out there specifically to help operate the Hawaii Winter Baseball League. But my sister is in the military. She was going overseas and 05 and was based out of Honolulu. And I went over to help my brother-in-law with my two nephews. You know, while she was going to be gone, the plan was to stay a year. And immediately when I got over there, it was how can I make this work with baseball? So the league was coming back. The Hawaiian Winter League was coming back in 06. So, you know, I immediately contacted some people and it was awesome. I ended up staying out there 3 years. You know, my family all went back when my sister got back, but I was out there for 3 years, and I helped operate the Hawaiian Winter League, which is, you know, gosh, it's, you know, dozens upon dozens of big leaguers now from that league. So, but the reason I bring that up is I made a lot of good contacts out there and met a lot of good, you know, people that, you know, I think hopefully saw that I had kind of a passion and interest and work ethic, you know, and desire to work in the game. And while I was just doing operations, I think everything I did leading up to scouting was, you know, it was to be around the game, keep, you know, get my foot in the door, and then kind of just, you know, you kind of master the job that you're in, you know, but then also trying to, you know, find my place in the game. And it was, you know, if you would have asked me 15 years ago if I was going to be scouting, I'd be like, you know, I didn't even probably see a pathway to that. So, but I made some good contacts out there, and then came back in 09 to work for at the time it was Baseball Info Solutions. I think it's now Sports Info Solutions, but so I worked with a great group of guys there doing a lot of video scouting, I guess it was, you know, defensive metrics, and kind of got a taste of some of that analytical side. And then got on with the Blue Jays in 2010. So, and it was Robert Ballmander, who was with us for a really long time as heading up our video. I started as a video guy in Lansing. Again, great staff. Sal Fasano was our manager. And just, I've had a lot of good influences and people that I guess took an interest in me and, you know, and kind of, you know, have been in my corner. And from that job, I got hired into the amateur department in that for the 2011 draft. I was our Midwest amateur video scout. So pretty much seeing all, you know, communicating with the area scouts and seeing, you know, basically anybody that the, you know, the department wanted me to, in addition to kind of gut feel guys for the area guys. And so that was a good experience and good taste of what it was like, I think, to be an area scout in terms of the schedule, traveling, you know, and just being around that side of things. And then, 2012, you know, from that season in 2011, that draft year, that fall, Andrew Tinnish hired me as an area scout. So 2012 was my first draft.
Quite a circuitous route and really an incredible testament to your perseverance. At any point, did you wonder, is this really the path for me, especially wearing a mascot uniform in small minor league towns?
To be honest, no. Yeah, man. I mean, I was all in, dude. I mean, there were other guys. Hey, like, there's a lot of good baseball guys I worked with early on that could have jobs in baseball. And a lot of the reason I say this is there's some luck involved to some of this too, I think, you know. But I think if you work hard and do the right things, you know, every day, and that's just kind of my general belief is, you know, and have some, you know, motivation to succeed, I think, you know, good things will happen. So no, man, I was all in. It was just what I think everybody starts, or not everybody, but you start out, oh, I want to, you know, you set your bar at, I don't know, I want to be a GM or something. And then, you know, along that path, you kind of find your way. Not saying that there's not higher aspirations within this game, but, you know, like I love doing what I do and, you know, being an area scout. So no, man, I'm, no, this is, Yeah, this is all good.
It's awesome. Like you said, good things happen. You put in the work, you traveled all over the U.S. and finally worked out for you. And now you're part of a scouting department that's had a lot of successes, especially recently. I do have to ask, what is your best minor league story? Because everyone who's worked in the minors has some stories, long nights, crazy days. What's your best minor league story?
I don't know. We might have to circle back to that one. Okay. Because there's a lot of good ones. I think most of all, you know, like I'm trying to think of maybe a specific story. I'm sure the lights went out a few times, you know, like picking up the little pieces of fireworks throughout the outfield, you know, on every whatever weekend fireworks game, and you're there for 2 hours past, you know, past the fans leaving. But man, I don't know if I could specifically say one. Man, but I will say, you know, I will say I remember just all the people I've worked with and the people I've been around, and there's a lot of characters, and I mean that in a good way, but you know, it's just a lot of good memories. Yeah, probably just the people. I mean, I know that probably doesn't give you a sexy answer, but or a fun answer, but that's, yeah, I always just, I think back, and I have a lot of friends from, you know, my time working in the minors, and people I still keep in touch with. So,
absolutely. And the Hawaii Winter League, you mentioned a lot of guys who became big leaguers played there. How much did that experience there help you kind of hone your eye for talent in particular?
Oh man, big time. Because look, you know what, and you know what, I'll think back to some stories. Those are probably some good ones from the Hawaiian Winter League, actually. I could probably pull one out here as I'm thinking, but I was able to, you know, we had such a small group of, it was a small operation in terms of just, in terms of, you know, working with Major League Baseball, to operate that league. And, so being around the field, I mean, we operated, like I helped run Hans LaRange Park in West Oahu, you know, which is like a old plantation field. So it was like, basically setting up, you know, we had trailers for, that's probably going to be a good story, but we had like modular trailers for clubhouses, you know, and you have Matt Wieters and these, like, you know, dudes that are, you know, massive guys, like professional athletes and world-class, you know, athletes coming in there, and, you know, they can barely move. But that's not answering your question, but I'd say just being around, it was such a small operation that I had kind of, like, and my bosses out there, like, I had my hands in all sorts of stuff and was able to sit there and, you know, during the games at least, like, pretty much watch the games night in and night out. And I'd say big time, man. I mean, and even, like, you know, as a scout, you kind of have that like Rolodex in your head of all the guys you've seen. And that I always go back to a lot of the players I've seen out there and think back and what I saw in them at that time, you know, and, you know, even as, you know, obviously as I go through day to day now. So I'd say it played a huge role. Yeah.
Looking back at some of the rosters you mentioned, Matt Wieters was there, Buster Posey was there, Todd Frazier was there, Yonder Alonso, Lucas Duda. I mean, some real big talented guys came through that league.
Absolutely, man. I mean, yeah, I mean, I could keep going and I'd still miss a bunch. I mean, Chris Medlin was out there. Dexter Fowler, Chris Carter, the big power hitter, you know, for a little bit. Jabba Chamberlain was out there, you know, at the same time that Andrew Brackman was a big time prospect. And God, man. And it was cool. You know, I don't know if you knew, like, that league, there were kind of MPB, like Nippon Professional Baseball, like had sent their kind of, like, I guess you'd call them their higher level prospects in each organization, sent their guys too. So that was a riot too, seeing those guys interact and play together. And then we had a few even local guys, gosh, man, like guys that even had some big league time, that played out there. So, but yeah, it was a lot of great talent, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to see the mix, different styles, different ages, all that, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, Daniel Murphy was out there when he was playing third base, and you know, and wasn't a big time guy yet, you know. But a good one, Kenley Jansen was catching out there.
Wow.
Yeah, man. I mean, you talk about a massive human being behind the plate, you know. So yeah, he was catching, not hitting. So that's probably a good, probably why he went that route.
It's awesome that you got to see those guys coming up, and I'm sure it honed your scouting eye and in a lot of ways helped lay the groundwork for you to sign a first rounder. All right, we're going to dive into Alek Manoah here. First, we're going to take a quick break. And we're back with Colson Barbish, area scout for the Toronto Blue Jays. Colson, when did you first see Alek Manoah, and when did he kind of jump on your radar as a guy of, hey, we should watch this guy as potentially someone that we can pick?
To the spring of 2018 was the first time. Now he was a sophomore by that time, and I may have seen him throw like an inning as a freshman the year before, but you know, he came in as a name. So in terms of like, hey, this guy has a good arm from South Florida, and just keep an eye on him. But you know, the memory that sticks out to me was the spring of 2018 where he was pitching in relief. And I believe it was against Oklahoma State where he came in, and I told him this when I first met him, when we sat down to meet that next fall, was, you know, he was bad. I mean, he survived the save. You know, it was one of those like heart attack saves where he threw, I think maybe 31 pitches stands out, and there were a lot more balls than strikes. And the only slider he threw hit a right-handed hitter in the back. And, you know, you said, okay, he's a big body guy with arm strength. You know, that's kind of where you – kind of how I left that day. And, all right, you know, we'll see him next year. And it's amazing what he did that – you know, the work and the kind of how he transformed himself from the end of that spring moving into the summer and you know, never looking back at this point, you know. So – but it was that game where it was, you know, not a very good outing for him that spring. And then I didn't see him in the Cape, you know. I was following, as always, as we do, you know, you follow your guys in your area. And, I saw that he was performing well, and we had guys that saw him up there and said he had really, you know, really improved. And, So, you know, again, he was on the radar as, okay, this guy's, I think, a lot more than a big guy with arm strength, you know, coming out of the summer. You know, he's more of a pitcher than we think. And, you know, as not having seen it still, you kind of want to see it with your own eyes. So he wasn't going to be pitching that fall at WVU. But, you know, all these things, at moments that stand out, I guess, where we were there for a scout day. I think they were supposed to be playing Marshall, and we ended up getting rained out. We kind of waited around hoping it was going to happen. A lot of guys were there, but you know, and then you kind of look down to the bullpen down in right field, it was drizzling at this point, but Alek was out there and he was throwing a bullpen, and I said, all right, I'm going to walk down there. You know, we got nothing going on. We're just waiting around in the press box or whatever. And I, you know, I just came away like, damn, man, he's a lot more delivery was simplified, a lot more under control. And I realize it's just a bullpen, but, you know, and he was dotting both sides of the plate with his fastball and, threw some good sliders. And that was just watching from up above. But, and again, it was just a bullpen, but came away going, man, this guy looks way different than what I saw, you know, in the spring. So that kind of was just a springboard into the winter for, okay, this guy, like, we needed to kind of boost and the guys that had already seen him in the Cape said, all right, this, you know, like, this is a guy to see out of the gate. And then I guess for me personally, that bullpen kind of cemented that as well. So then, you know, week one, Kennesaw State in the spring, he didn't stop what he was doing from the summer. You know, he it was really impressive, man. I mean, it was like plus command both sides of the plate and put him away with the slider and the fastball. But yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, he led the Cape Cod League in strikeouts that summer, and as you mentioned, right out of the gate was really, really good that junior year. How many of his starts did you see that season? How often were you in there?
Oh, man. I can tell you in 2 seconds. I want to say four or five. I remember three specifically, and then I went back. Yeah, I saw five, because then I saw him again in the regional. So, yeah, five.
At what point during those five did you say, this is a first rounder?
The first one, Kennesaw State. I put a first round number on him and, yeah, called him a big leaguer. But, yeah.
What is the process for a guy who is that high potential first rounder? How many different guys come in to see him once you put in that first report? Take us through the process of getting from that first report to actually him being the selection on draft day.
Yeah, I'd say that very next week, I think we had – I don't know if I want to say it was Georgia Southern, maybe where they went, but we had, you know, my cross checker was there. I think we even had a national cross checker there. So, you know, you call your guys immediately after that performance opening week, and you kind of raise the flag. Yeah, it was already somewhat raised, but you really raise it and. So from that point forward, you know, I can't say we had somebody at every start, but, you know, we had a lot of looks and throughout, you know, in addition to, you know, myself and, you know, Michael Youngberg, my cross checker, and then our national guys all seeing them, and Steve Sanders at the time, you know, our scouting director at the time, and Tony LaCava. I think we, if I remember, I think, you know, some of our special assistants, like, I think it was either, yeah, Q was, Paul Quantrill was, you know, even saw him for us. I don't know, Pat Henke might have even seen him. So we had looks, you know, from all parts of the department and organization.
Would you say there was a consensus that, yeah, this is the guy?
As I wasn't in the draft room, but yeah, as you know, as the season kind of wore on, and then, you know, there was I know Steve and Tony were both at the start versus Lodolo, you know, against TCU and Morgantown, as were a lot of scouts, but yeah, man, I'd say, you know, as we were nearing the end, you know, it was becoming clear that, you know, there was some really strong interest for him to be picked, you know, with our first rounder.
You mentioned he'd kind of cleaned some things up. He's a very, very big guy. We see sometimes big guys, it takes some time to kind of grow into their bodies and figure out how everything works. What specifically were the improvements you saw from that sophomore or junior year?
Just him going to that no wind up, you know, he tells you, like, basically simplify, because he is such a big guy, you know, and you got, you know, long levers and, you know, more kind of longer moving parts, but was he simplified it to a no wind up, almost like a, you know, you see a lot more of that these days, like just a small side step and go. But yeah, I think that just really helped him. In addition to, you know, I think, just kind of like when you talked to Alec, there was a moment where, you know, there was a period where when he got removed from the rotation that spring before the Cape, it was like, all right, it was, I don't think he'd call it rock bottom, but it was almost like he was kind of feeling sorry for himself, and a credit goes to his support system, and in particular his mom, Susanna. Like, you know, he'll tell you, he called her and she always tells it like it is, like, and, you know, like, stop feeling sorry for yourself and go out there and, you know, and make improvements and kind of get better. So I think it was probably somewhat something I can't put my finger on too, in addition to the delivery, but something that, you know, like a kind of a mental click for him also.
Yeah, I mean, that leads into a big part of this is not just scouting what these guys can do physically. You get to know these guys mentally, their support system, as you mentioned. What were your interactions with Alec and his family and just kind of getting to know him during this process?
Yeah, in particular, it was all Alec. I mean, at my point, I had never I think I met his family. So in particular, I mean, his family, I think I met them in the hotel, like, few days before the draft, like during that regional weekend when they were in town, briefly, you know, it was just a like, hi, how are you? But back to Alec, I mean, like that fall, first time I met him face to face was that fall, you know, when we go in for your scout meetings, fall of what, 2018, before his, you know, before his draft spring. And I think that's where, you know, that's where it just kept kind of building, or like a higher level of interest was, I mean, yeah, this guy has an infectious personality, and that, I mean that in a good way. And it's like, I was, so obviously every team was there over a 2 or 3 day period in Morgantown to meet with, you know, not just him, but other draft eligible, West Virginia, guys. And, I had on my day that I was there, you know, he probably met with, you know, 10 to 12 other teams, and it wasn't scheduled out for us. So it was an unstructured day. So it was just like, hey, grab the guy and you bring him in and meet with him. So I had him last, I think it was like between 9 and 10 PM. And I, you know, and I sat down with him last. I asked him to take, you know, we have a couple different, you know, tablet little exercises we do that take some, you know, take some time. And then also just in addition, most importantly, just me sitting down and getting to know him and meet with him. And that's, man, he at the end of that, you know, and he's the one who's kind of on the stage, you know, for all day. And he had, I mean, 100% focus, interest in the conversation. And he was so engaged. And I mean, it was just like, it was impressive. I mean, to tell you that. And just the things that we talked about were had good substance. And it just left you really believing in him as a person. And so, yeah, that was it. You know, that was the main one. And then, you know, just other information that I had gathered too, is like, these, there were guys a couple of years before that, you know, I like to ask other players, you know, like who were some of your best teammates, you know, team leaders. And there were guys when he was a freshman, you don't hear a lot of this, but there were guys telling me in draft meetings that I had 2 years before that, you know, oh, this freshman that we have, man, he's, you know, he's a leader, you know, some other terms that they would use. And I'm like, wow, really? Okay. So that stuck out to me. Yeah, man. So, I mean, like, and then there were just other, I mean, it was that meeting. And then I think we talked once more in that winter, and then we met with them a little more in depth, with kind of, it was some of our high performance, like Steve Sanders, Tony Okava, high performance came, like our high performance department came in, and we kind of sat down with them and did a deeper, you know, meeting as the draft got closer.
So everything's starting to line up here. The mental component's there, the physical component is there, the performance is there. You mentioned you weren't in the draft room, but draft day comes around. How much influence did you have? Were you calling guys, banging the table? How did it all kind of play out where Alec Manoah became a member of the Blue Jays organization?
You know, I said my piece, and like, you know, I think from, you know, just the conversations, I think it's just kind of like it builds throughout the spring. So just from, you know, like the fall and winter meetings that we have and talking about the player, about Alec, and then into that first look in the spring, you know, and not only what kind of like the notes I put from that fall meeting with Alec at West Virginia to that first start at Kennesaw. Like, so, you know, guys are reading all that stuff either in the front office and, or, you know, our bosses in the amateur department. And just, I'm also, we have conversations in person and on the phone. And so I think a lot of that, I'm like, I guess I'm pounding the, I guess, proverbial table, like as we go along. So, you know, in my draft meeting, before in May, that year, and then leading up, we did a lot of makeup, background work on them, and it was really impressive and kind of further kind of cements your conviction. And then just, you go into the, I think those guys went in the draft room and, it's not just me, but all the other guys that really liked him, and, also our analytical department and those guys that, there was, it was a great, it was just a great process all around in terms of, how we got to selecting Alec. So that's what even makes it even more, I think, rewarding at this point.
You make the selection, and immediately he goes out to short season Vancouver and is really, really good. It's only 17 innings, 6 starts, short outings each time, but really, really good. 27 strikeouts to 5 walks. As an area guy, what's it like for you seeing the guy you just drafted and put everything on the table for go out and have some immediate success?
No, just proud. Yeah, man. And really happy for him. But yeah, I mean, you try not to, you get excited and you can't help but follow, the guys after you sign them, so not that you can't live and die by all this, minor league performance stuff, but it's exciting, man, when guys perform out of the gate. And just proud, and proud of him.
Are there nerves for, as an area scout, a guy you sign if he goes out and gets bombed first few outings or something doesn't work out?
I mean, I guess naturally, but if you believe in the player and you believe in the kid, and then yeah, you don't get wrapped up in the, right out of the gate, that's why they call it player development, and these guys, they're not, I don't care. Even 23-year-old guy that might look physically mature, and you sign him late in the draft, like he's not done developing, in one way or another, So the reason I say that is, guys come at different times and development timetables are all, vary. And if you believe in yourself and you're, convicted enough as a scout, you're not doubting yourself.
And there was certainly no reason to doubt anything with Alec. As we mentioned, he went out, was really, really good in the Northwest League that year. 2020, obviously, no minor league season. Everything got shut down. This spring training, he really, really started to make waves. I remember making some calls in spring training. We do a piece every year where we highlight the top spring training performers. And his name came up again and again and again. Some of the outings he had against the Yankees in particular in spring training really put him on the map. What were you hearing, and how much did you continue having a relationship with him after the draft, through the pandemic, and into this year?
So to touch on the first part of that, what was I hearing about spring training performances was just our guys, like our down in player development, and even the guys that through our amateur staff, that were talking to some of our player development people were rave reviews. And there's even a few, pro scouts that were down at spring training kind of a text and say, oh my God, man, it's like, it's really impressive what's coming out. So, that's kind of in terms of like what you'd see. And then it was like video clips, and I don't even know how much, like, I guess there was some minor league stuff on TV, minor league, like MLB Network in terms of spring training games, but I don't know if any of his starts were on there, I don't think. But, that's kind of like, we have some video in our internal system of him pitching too. So I was able to watch, some that way. But other than that, man, no, just like I'd check in, just occasionally check in with him, throughout the, you know, throughout the COVID shutdown and all that, and talked to him. He, you know, he had opened a gym for, you know, for himself down there. He and his brother down in, you know, in their hometown during that. So he had a spot to work out. So he put, you know, some of that bonus to good use and the right way. So, but no, just kind of more so, hey, how you doing? You know, not always just baseball stuff, just making sure he's doing well, family as well. And yeah, man. And then just kind of like attaboys, you know, as you go, and congrats and stuff like that. So, but
again, spring training really, really opened some eyes, goes out to AAA, dominates, gets the call for his first major league start May 27th against the Yankees. Went out through 6 scoreless innings, 7 strikeouts, just a remarkable performance for a major league debut. I assume you were watching it?
Yeah, I actually, Gil Kim encouraged me to, you know, I was at home a couple of days before, and he encouraged me. I didn't have any, so that was during conference tournament coverage, you know, for Division I. And I didn't have to cover a conference tournament, so I was somewhat flexible with my schedule. So he, you know, I was like, oh, New York City, it's pretty, you know, Yankee Stadium, that's pretty cool. And it's not that long. What's it, you know, 5.5 to 6 hour drive from Richmond. So he encouraged me, and I hopped in the car and went up there. And so, yeah, man, I was at the stadium. It was cool.
Well, that's awesome. What were you thinking? Was your heart pounding? He goes up there. First major league hitter, he faces DJ LeMahieu, and then he has Rougned Odor, Aaron Judge. I mean, what was that like for you watching that first
game? Yeah, he walked DJ too.
lead off walk. I mean, what were you thinking? Was your heart pounding? What was going on?
No, I mean, no, actually his probably wasn't either. I don't know. But no, I mean, I guess, yeah, somewhat. I don't know if it was pounding, but yeah, there was definitely, it's exciting. I kind of, in those moments, I sat by myself. I didn't have anybody with me that drove up with me anyway, but I just kind of sat by myself, and I enjoyed just kind of, you know, watching him work and watching the game. But I mean, what was I thinking? I mean, after he walks the first guy, you're like, oh boy. But then at the same time, like, and I mean this at the same time again, and I don't want to keep going back, but I mean, I believe in Alec and his belief in himself, that you're like, all right, he's going to be all right. And I sincerely mean that. And he was, you know, he showed good poise and really, he wasn't scared of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Lead off walk, comes right back, strikes out Odor, strikes out Aaron Judge. I have to ask, seeing him strike out Aaron Judge, I would imagine that was a pretty cool sight.
Yeah, it was cool, man. Yeah, definitely. And hey, man, that changeup that he threw to Odor too, you know, because that was a question that people had coming into the draft was, I don't know, does he have a third pitch? And, you know, he didn't really need it at West Virginia. So to see him come out there, and the development of the change has been really, his changeup has been really encouraging. And, you know, he'd always flash you some good ones at West Virginia, but he just didn't need it a lot. So, but yeah, he got a door kind of looking silly too.
Yeah, again, just seeing you go through and go back and look through the game. He actually got LeMahieu, then struck him out the second time through. I mean, just really, really bounced back. You mentioned that leadoff walk. He only walked one more batter the rest of the game. Got through 6 scoreless, 7 punchouts. And he's continued to have success here throughout his rookie season, and has really become one of the bigger, more important pitchers for the Blue Jays. As we sit here recording this, it's a 2.90 ERA and 8 starts. He's averaging well over a strikeout per inning. I mean, he's really settled into the rotation. We mentioned earlier you believed in him. He was obviously a college guy, first rounder, who you always hope those guys can move relatively quickly. But for him to be in a major league rotation, having the success he's had really 2 years after being drafted, and not even having 1 year of that to actually pitch in the minor leagues, has it come together even faster than you expected?
I'd be lying if I said – if I said no. so yeah. Yeah. And, but yeah, all the credit goes to him, man, the commitment to put himself in good shape and his routines have been, you know, really good. And he just like, he's really, yeah, I think the alt site was big for him. And I think he'd tell you the same last year. A lot of guys seem to have said that, you know, about that alt site. And so, yeah, I mean, it's been really impressive what he's been able to do so far.
You'd had one big leader before. You drafted and signed Ryan McBroom, a 15th rounder, also out of West Virginia. He reached the major leagues with the Royals. Minoa was your second big leaguer. Was it still the same level of excitement as the first?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Alex, like, I mean, to make a starting pitcher is probably a little bit different. You know, like starting pitcher, Yankee Stadium, that was pretty, you know, that was kind of highly anticipated. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, McBroom's a great dude. And I was really excited for him when he got, you know, he got traded from the Yankees to the Royals, and that, you know, we had traded him to the Yankees a few years before. But then when he got traded to the Royals for that September, you know, and got the September call, that was really exciting too. So.
Absolutely. Well, Colson, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on having another big leaguer.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, man.
Once again, everybody, that was Colson Barbish, the Blue Jays area scout for currently Virginia and Eastern North Carolina, but previously West Virginia and the Mid-Atlantic, and even before that, Ohio, Michigan, and West Virginia. Just an awesome story about everything he went through to live out his dream and become a scout, to being the signing scout for really someone who's a big, big part of the Blue Jays' future and really a big part of their present as well. We're very, very happy Colson was able to join us today, and we thank you as well for listening. This has been another BA Scout Series podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Colson Barbish, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening, everybody.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.